The Nine News podcast is brought to you in association with Season Master and the Window Workshop. All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 325 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. And thank you very much for downloading the show this week. All positive around the club at the moment after an excellent start to the season, and we're going to be reviewing the fantastic 3-0 win over Sutton, as well as looking ahead to a big week. One absolutely massive fixture, and then Chelsea away after that. But Stu, let's go straight in with the Sutton game. And I mean, we all know what happened. We won 3-0, three second half goals. We've still not scored a goal in the first half this season, so we might want to address that one on Saturday if we can.
That's a good stat. Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah. Half time, it's always a nil.
But nil.
Yeah. Well, apart from Wrexham, they have actually beaten us, and Coventry, to be fair. But anyway, hey, look, it doesn't. We've not lost a game this season, so it really clearly doesn't matter. But Sutton, as we know, yeah, we started as we have been all season at this point, 4-4-2, really. Team that seems to pick itself at the moment, as we know, with Armani Little, Jake Reeves in the centre midfield pairing, Ryan Johnson and Joe Lewis at the centre-half pairing, with Lee Brown coming in at left-back. Left-back is, and then centre-half, the only real positions that are changing in the league so far this season, with the injury to Lee Brown on the opening day and Alex Pearce stepping in here and there. But anyway, yeah, so that was that. Three second half goals, as we said. Ryan Johnson just past the hour mark, about 25 minutes to go. And then in the last 10 minutes, Harry Pell with his first touch coming on as a sub. And then James Tilley with a fantastic third 5 minutes from the end of normal time. And I can't remember how many minutes were added on, but it was far too many, whatever it was. 8 points from 12 at the start of the season, five unbeaten in all competitions. So we're looking this season at three things from each fixture to try and focus on. And yeah. I think, and we will touch on, of course, the goals and the overall performance and stuff like that. But this unbeaten start of the season, I'm looking at it, I'm going, do you know what? We're not making mistakes. It's not saying that we're perfect. And, you know, Sutton had a couple of really good chances against us, especially second half. But generally, when you watch League Two football, teams that don't make mistakes are the ones that tend to win matches defensively. I mean, offensively, yeah, we can talk about misplaced passes and overhit set pieces as all you like, but defensively, there's nothing special about it. There's nothing fantastic about it. It's just the basics of defending that we're getting right, and we're not making silly decisions. We're not trying to pass our way out of situations where we shouldn't do. We're just clearing our lines and keeping things really simple. And I think that makes a big difference for us.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, you're right, you know, header-wise, if you think against Sutton, we were interviewing Alex Bass for Don's TV, and he was saying he couldn't believe how many headers Ryan Johnson and Joe Lewis had to deal with. He just said it was constant. But I can't recall many getting over the top of them. And you're right, when we headed it, we either headed it out for a throw or we just got it up the pitch. We don't tend to make errors fullback wise, so we're not trying to play balls, square balls. You know, if you think about it on you know, if you think about Saturday, Jake Reeves, some said, had his poorest game. That's because he set a high standard, but also because we weren't trying to play through the middle because you knew it was congested, and we only really got the ball to Jake and my little sort of once the game had been won in a way. You know, the third goal, Jake Reeves gets a bit of space which he didn't have for much of the game, and then pings a diagonal ball over to James Tilley. So I think you're right. We said last season, didn't we, you know, League Two is basically doing your basics right, you know, 4-4-2 or that sort of side of it. Don't play silly balls inside, hitting the channels. They're the teams that beat us, you know, Northampton's, the Barrows. That's how they beat us. Yeah, that's how they beat us. I think we've got a bit more about us than that, if I'm being honest with you. But we definitely have the ability to turn people around with Josh Noble on one side and James Tilley the other. So we've got that quality. But you're right, we're not making mistakes. But I also think, you know, centre-half-wise, they're better than just heading the ball out. But they're prepared to do that. And Sutton is always a benchmark, isn't it? Because Sutton play no disrespect to Sutton, they play basic League Two football. They're all giants. You know, that sort of the 3-0 was pleasing, but it was more the case of how we got that 3-0. And I think that was a big marker on New Year's Day, which we were trying to forget.
Yeah, well, we could have been 3-0 down inside 10 minutes on New Year's Day last season. But talk about Jake Reeves and his influence on the game. And I still say, yes, Ball was bypassing him a lot of the time for the majority of the game. But in key moments, yeah, and also some of the set pieces were overhit. Many of them were overhit, in fact. But then you saw with Harry Powell's goal what we were aiming to do with that ball to the back stick and get someone running in on it. And I just think when you look at Tilly's contribution and Reeves' contributions, they're your match winners. So there's where your quality is. And yes, we can say that Reeves didn't have his best game, but he still comes up with two assists by the end of it, because at this level, as you say, it's moments that are going to win you matches. And that's exactly what it was. It was moments of quality from those two individuals.
And that's what I say. I don't think Jake Reeves had a poor game on Saturday, but I think the standard that he set, that's the difference with people now, is that he sets such a high benchmark of how he plays that people would judge him. And you're right, the set pieces weren't great, but it was obviously something we were planning for to get around the back stick. And it helps probably Harry Powell coming on. Very rarely do you do changes from a corner. But we did, and it seemed to. Hey, look, Harry Powell's a big lump. He's going to get on the end of things, isn't he? But it seemed a bit ironic that he did after that. But you're right, Jake Reeves, he just does the basics right, you know. And I think in games where maybe, especially home games, obviously we're going to build up to Forest Green, and we've got quite a few home games coming up where we probably are expected to be the more attacking team, and possession-wise, I think we'll see a very strong Jake Reeves.
The other quite well, the point about corners, sorry, is yeah, well, very rare, not very rarely, invariably, that's the word I was looking for, teams will not make substitutions at corners when they're defending. Free kicks or corners, they won't, because they're worried about upset and balance and stuff like that. So you do wonder if the reverse is then true. Why not stick some different attackers on, confuse your defenders and get them a little confuzzled? And it seemed to work anyway. The other quality we had on show for me on Saturday was the goalkeeper. And I think we saw that in the save at 1-0. Almost immediately, in fact, we scored. They go down the other end, get a free kick of their own, similar position to the one that we scored the opening goal from. Good quality ball in, good header, excellent save. And I think, again, that makes the difference. And I mean, to go off on a tangent for a moment, we talked about the quality of Alex Bass that he brings in. Obviously, very, very good goalkeeper. We forget the win over Coventry in the cup, which got us the Chelsea game, was largely down to the saves that Nick Zanov made. You play Zanov at Chelsea, don't you?
Hey, look, if he's going to go to one, a look, it's one of those. We're tending now, even in League Two, to have just cup goalkeepers or cup teams.
Yeah.
Who would believe that was ever the case? But yeah, hey, look, do you know what? Alex Bass will be knocking on the door to play, I'm sure. Nick Zanev was in the team. He right, he done some really good saves, didn't he, during the game? So. Not too sure. I'm not too sure. I think it's good to have Nick Zanev. They're definitely, the competition for Nick Zanev is definitely improving. Not improving Nick's game, but he obviously knows when he comes in, he has to make a difference. Do you know what I mean? Very difficult with Alex Bass, to be fair, because he just does everything well, doesn't he? No frill goalkeeper, but the definite improvement on is his distribution. I think that's the difference between him and Nick. I think they can both do the saves. I think Alex Bass is better with his distribution. If you look at a lot of corners at the moment where we're trying to break quickly on the counter side of it, he's kicking into areas is perfect. So I think that's where the difference is. But yeah, hey, look, Robbo's got, not Robbo, Joey Jackson's got a decision to
Blimey,
make.
breaking news.
Breaking news, Robbo's, well, Robbo will be on the bench, but it'll be on the opposition bench at Chelsea. But yeah, probably wouldn't surprise me to see Nick get a number one space.
Yeah, and I suppose Ryan McLean will also get some minutes as well. That remains to be seen. But that brings me to my third point again. Squad options. We've already mentioned about Harry Powell coming on scoring with his first touch. But again, you looked at the respective benches, and we seem to have a little bit more, isn't it good to say, than Sutton did in that regard. And I know Sutton have got injuries, they had suspensions. Harry Smith was suspended as well, which probably did help us out a little bit and got rid of some of their physicality up front. I think they had Lee Angold and Scott Cashgate up front, and they are They're nuisances, but they're not physical threats. And I think maybe if Smith was there, that might have made things a little bit different. Who knows? But anyway, point being, as I say, options are there for us, especially when at the moment we seem to have remained, we haven't picked up any fresh injuries, as far as I can tell, on top of the pre-season ones of Jack Curry and Hussein Bilal. But then when those two are back in as well, all of a sudden, again, you're looking for extra, more and more options, and it's a strong position to be in.
Yeah, and it's I was looking through the stats actually earlier. Just obviously where we're playing at the moment, we're playing with a settled team, but also the subs on a whole team was settled. So if you look at the so our common substitution now is Harry Pell and Josh Davison. In the league games, they've been sub for 4 games and come on the pitch for 4 games, averaging about 15 minutes. So that's obviously a ploy at the moment. We've got quite a few games coming up, obviously with Chelsea, but then we've also got the EFL Trophy and quite a few games. So be interesting to see how he utilises his squad. But at the moment, we're able to bring, let's be fair, right? When you can bring Josh Davison on and Harry Pell on for 15, 20 minutes when Ali and Omar run their nuts off, it's what it's a very healthy position to be in. And obviously Harry Pell comes on and scores a goal. So yeah, I think the squad options are really good. Obviously, once we get Hussein Bailey back and Jack Curry back, that gives us a lot of competition on that side. So the squad looks healthy, and who knows, we might, some others might come in before the window shuts, which it's end of next week, isn't it, I believe.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that in a moment. Actually, we can talk about it now, because my next question was going to be, if Jake Jervis had missed the chance that Ali missed, for how many years would we be talking about it?
You know what? He's just snatching at things, isn't he? He's snatching at things. That header, we're obviously right behind the goal. And he could have let the ball come down a bit. I think he tried to head it from a too high.
When it was two, yeah.
He could have let it come down and headed it. The keeper was scrambling. The keeper was unlikely to make a save. And it just felt to me he was snatching, which is natural because he's missed two penalties. Missed him, he's had him saved, hasn't he?
Yeah, but they were poor penalties.
They were. At least we found something that he's not very good at, because he's good at most of the other things. What I would say though is I thought Ali was excellent on Saturday. I look at Goodliff centre half. So Goodliff's a very good centre half at League Two level, and Ali had him. Had him worried. I noticed in a way Ben was it not Ben Goodliffe, is it? Is it
Ben
Ben Goodliffe?
Goodliffe, yeah, it is.
Yeah. I noticed that normally, he's a bit more composed, but he was kicking balls out for throws, for corners, just because Ali was always harassing him. So I thought his performance was really, really good. I thought, when you're gonna play a Sutton, you need your forwards to keep the ball, and Omar and Ali, the ball just stuck quite a lot. So yeah, we can forgive him his Jake Jervis moment. But I think once he gets a goal, he scores bundles. I really do. And isn't it nice that we've scored quite a lot of goals already, and we've not even got one from our top scorer from January onwards last year.
Yeah, he will hopefully score bundles as long as he's still here and hasn't departed to Barnsley, who are showing strong interest if the rumours are to be believed. I mean, watch this space on this one. As you say, transfer window's still got. If we're going to lose, hey, look, who knows what the situation with Jack Curry is? If he's, well, he is injured, but what I mean is depending on the severity of the injury, because it's gone very quiet on this one. No one seems to actually know what's going on. He's just injured. Have I missed a report on what the actual injury is and how long he's out for?
No, I can't recall. I can't recall it. There was a clip on Twitter from the club which showed Ali, Huss, and Jack Curry all sort of trained together, and I
Right,
think Jack
okay.
Curry and Huss are sort of doing some training. But no, I suppose it's like anything, isn't it? Right, when your team's winning. Like, so what I mean by it, last year when our team wasn't winning, you want to know what's happening to players injured, because you're hoping something comes in to make it better. I suppose at the moment it's gone a little bit unnoticed, because actually we're still winning without them.
Yeah.
So I suppose it has gone a bit quiet in that way. But I haven't heard anything. Obviously the transfer window is creeping up. The Barnsley interest. Hey, look, do you know what? The way I look at it, it's. He's always going to get interest, but we're obviously going to have a price. I feel a bit more confident this season that if worst comes to worst, and Barnsley and Rotherham are supposed to be rumoured also, if looking at him, that we know what his price is, and if that's reached, then we're a selling club, as like anything, and we, let Addy go on to, well, I wouldn't say a better place, because you've said you've been at Barnsley or Rotherham, that ain't better. Anyway,
How did Rotherham get
but
involved in this?
Rotherham are also rumoured to be another club that are interested in him as well.
They're a
If rumours,
championship. They're championship now, aren't they?
that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
If rumours are to be believed,
He's not going there.
but I think what I'm more confident on is that we won't be if we sold. Not yet. We know nothing, but if we sold something, sold next week, I'm confident we've got replacements in place and we're not panicking. I believe our recruitment has been proven this summer. So I'm a lot more confident that if we did end up losing a player, we can replace them.
And if there are any scouts from Barnsley listening to this podcast, we'd just like to point out, as evidenced on Saturday, that Ali couldn't actually hit a barn door with a banjo, or couldn't even hit a Barnsley door with a banjo. There we go. Do you know what else I noticed about Saturday that hasn't gone really spoken about much? I think Matt Gray, the site manager, referenced it, but I haven't seen anyone else. The wind. And this did cause a little bit of an issue, I think. Let's be honest, any neutrals watching that game wouldn't have thought much of it, to be honest. The football was not great, and there was a lot of long balls that went nowhere, and a hell of a lot of clearances that, aided perhaps by whatever slant is on this sun pitch, but it wouldn't have affected the high balls, would it? The amount of times the ball went out, especially from our view behind the goal that we scored the three goals in. The right-hand touchline. Oh my good God, Joe, I'm going to have PTSD of watching footballs just flying out for throw-ins over that touchline. Felt like some sort of weird Chinese water torture. But yeah, I just found it interesting that the wind definitely had an influence on the game, I think, in terms of the quality of it, because it was not the best.
Well, yeah, I thought we played well. So we played against the wind in the first half, and I thought we did better than Sutton did with it. We were, I think, we hit the ball a lot flatter, and turned them around quite a bit. We got quite a bit of joy of Josh Nerval getting in and stuff, and then when it did come short, we managed to hold it up. And the second half, obviously, we scored three goals with the wind. Difficult to know whether that made a difference. Obviously, the set piece for Johnson, it's a great ball. And the wind would only help it coming towards the keeper. But yeah, look, it wasn't a great game of football. We won 3-0. If you're going to go down and say you loved how we played, no, we just Sutton are going to play a certain way. You're going to have to do the dirty stuff against them. And I'm sure when we play teams with more possession, maybe like Forest Green and Notts County and stuff, I'm sure we can mix it as well. But yeah, it did feel like there's a slant, didn't it?
I think it's this Sutton result was this generation's Palace 3-0 Carl Leeburn double, three second half goals to win 3-0 against a local rival. I think that's what people will remember. Obviously, it got very, very loud after those three goals. The noise behind the goal was something else, to be honest with you.
Yeah, can I
And I
just
think.
quickly say it's funny, I've got a few Sutton friends, and a few of them messaging me going, it was nice for you to win your cup final. Which I chuckled at. I said, if you think visiting Gander Green Lane is a cup final, then you got a problem.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to rise to that. It's interesting, of course, the chocolate and ambers that they're called. Their kit design is noticeable for how they've really sort of toned down the chocolate part of it, because otherwise it would look quite horrendously shocking. But again, we won't pull at that thread. Sutton is a non-league stadium doing all it can be to make it acceptable for the Football League, very Kings Meadow-esque when we first got promoted in those regards. But Stuart just backs up my point. What's the word I'm looking for? We sort of tie ourselves in knots. We drive ourselves a little bit crazy talking about Plough Lane and facilities and catering and match day experience and all those sorts of things. Bottom line is, no one cares. Everyone cares about the football. It's all about the result, and it's all about creating some atmosphere, and that's what people want from football. And I think that just proves it on Saturday.
And also keeping your bottle tops on your lids. Bottle tops
Keeping
on
your
your
bottle
lids.
tops on your lids.
Yeah, that's not one, is it? Bottle tops on your bottle.
There you
Of
go.
course, that's
Lids
what it's about,
on your
but
bottles.
Joe, I bought a bottle of a soft drink And
You can advertise
I
it, Stuart.
was,
It's fine.
yeah, it was Code Zero, and I actually was quite surprised when I had. I nearly gave it back to them and said, "Do you not need to take the
Jeez.
bottle top off?" But I
Oh,
thought,
my
"No,
God.
I'd be a bit risky and a bit, you know, a bit brave." And then I got another drink a bit later on, and they'd done the same thing, and I noticed everyone else was saying it as well, weren't they? So, yeah, you're right. Do you know what? Match day experience. Sometimes it's just what happens on the pitch. Although I think a few people have commented the Sutton stewards were really good in terms of they just like referees. When you don't notice a referee, you know they've done a good job. And I didn't really notice the stewards at all because there was no hassle.
Yeah, that's what stewards should be. It should be seen but not heard, if that makes sense. The bottle tops thing is a bit of a it's an issue for people. I must admit, I realize we're getting no, we'll get fined if anyone throws a bottle on the pitch type thing. But I don't know. It's similar again because something else Sutton did is they accepted cash, and I could buy a program for cash money, and. It's not quite the perfect analogy, but we seem to be doing things. We seem to have a wasp nest in our houses, and we're burning down the house to get rid of it. It seems a bit mu too much to deal with these problems that we're having to deal with. I think banning bottle tops is it's tragic, really, that in a football stadium, people don't think you can be trusted to have a bottle with a lid on it. And when you think of how many instances have we had with bottles being thrown onto a pitch, like we had one, and now we're being threatened
It
with
was a
some
couple, and I
fine.
think it was a couple, and I think it was a couple in the same game. I believe it was Salford.
Right.
To be fair, I would throw more than just a, but of course, I wouldn't throw it or endorse throwing things. But yeah, do you know what? Me personally, I'd rather deal with the problem, the person, the
The
people.
person, yes, exactly, yeah.
You know, and because the bottle top thing, right? It's annoying because it then means your drink's open. You know, not everyone drinks all their drink in one. You know, we're not
No.
all. It's not a beer, is it? Where you just want to down your beer or bill your or you know down your shot glass. I just feel it's, and also it just means one of the issues I do have is it's just very slow service on the West Stand. It's a big stand to fill and also to do catering, but just even having to take the bottle top off it adds what 20, 30 seconds depending on how easy it is. It just feels, yeah, you're right. It just feels a bit too much. And of course, let's not forget, you know, just to remind people who are going to Chelsea game, have to be very, very careful about what chants are now being sung, because they are coming down very hot, on it. So, we may have to, I know you're chuckling. I think it's an important thing to mention. Wolves did get fined £100,000 apparently because of their fans.
Yeah.
And just a little point, you know, to be fair, that's more than what UEFA would have fined anyone that had racist chanting in their competitions. But let's not get onto that in terms of that side of it. It just,
Do you
yeah.
think the Wolves issue? Because I've got a Wolves fan at work, a season ticket holder at Wolves, and he actually told me about the whole situation when they played Chelsea with that song, and obviously some groups of fans sang it, and as soon as they were told over the PA to stop singing it, of course, what did they do? Most of them started singing it more. A lot of them started singing, "We're Wolverhampton, we'll sing what we want." And do you know what? Actually, I think it's a chant that was on its deathbed anyway. And now causing a big hoo-ha about it has actually now brought it to the public consciousness and the public attention. So it's had exactly the opposite effect that I think you would want. And it just, I mean, personally, I must admit, honestly, when I maybe naively, I used to sing that song. And we at Selhurst Park, when I was however old I would have been, and you know, I'm only 29, so I would have been about 5 or 6 at the time. But
With a dummy in.
at no point did I think of it, it did not even occur to me that it was anything to do implying it homosexuality. Do you know what I thought it was? It was implying that these players had basically sold themselves for the extra money that Chelsea had brought in at the time. And that's what
It's
it was about.
interpretive.
Yeah. I
Don't get
think.
wrong. Don't get wrong. I think yes, it is something that should be taken out of football. I think when you heighten it and you make people right, we're human beings, aren't we? If someone says don't do something, we tend to do it. That sort of side. I think it's the right thing to do. It does, like I say, it does make a little bit of a farce on some of the fines that UEFA have handed out
Yeah.
for things, and neither of them are acceptable. What concerns me a little bit is that you're fining clubs. So that means we're responsible
Again,
for
yeah.
whatever happens. And what is, why is it 100,000? Is it measured on, I'm not saying we can get a fine, but is it 100,000 for Wolves and 100,000 for us? Or is it measured on the fact that they've got a lot more money than we have? Because so that worries me a little bit. I think it's the right thing to do. We've also got, we had the thing last season with Tottenham fans, and we had the obviously the chance that a comedy son at Tottenham. I get them trying to cut down on it, but yeah, it's sad when you've got to tell people what songs they can sing or what can't sing. It should be normal to not sing songs about, certain people
I
or
think it.
certain.
I think it died. To be honest with you, I think it died a death, and it was dying a death anyway. And now I think it, now you're going to see it. You're going to see exactly what you're going to see. It's going to pick up again. All these things will start picking up again. It's sort of an abdication. Well, it's a little bit of who knows? I think you're right when you sort of talk about fans being the club being fined for the actions of an individual or a couple of individuals. Again, it takes away that feeling of personal responsibility. Possibly, there's also the example. Wolves could perhaps argue that some they tried to make an example out of them. Ivan Toney did an interview this week on YouTube where he said that he felt he was being made an example of, given his suspension and fine for betting on football matches. He felt he was unfairly treated because he was a Premier League footballer, and they made the punishment harder for him because they could then use that as an example which to punish him with. Again, fair enough, but again, it's slightly different with his situation. He is an individual. And he has been punished for his individual actions, which were wrong. So I'm not quite sure if he's quite got that one right. But
Can I just say something about Ivan Toney? I know we're sort of going on to a different subject here, but I didn't recall that he'd been banned from playing football. He actually can't train with Brentford until the second week in September,
right, okay.
which I find unbelievable. So you've got someone who's obviously got a bit of an issue with gambling, and you're basically saying, I can give you more time and keep you away from your support base. I find it unbelievable that we've said you can't play. I don't know. How's he training? Is he kicking in a local park? Have they got someone on the Brentford training ground gate to make sure he doesn't sneak
Yeah,
in?
exactly. How do you? Yeah.
I just found it really. Hey, look, he's done wrong. You shouldn't bet on your own team and stuff like that.
Or himself, which is what he was doing.
But if anyone saw him when he used to play for Northampton, no one would have bet on him anyway. I still can't believe he's improved as much as he has. But fair play to him. Although, of course, there is transfer, and this is also an interesting one with us, is that he, in an interview he did this week, to be fair, he didn't distance himself from any transfer activity to Man U, Arsenal, or
Right.
anybody. He mentioned them, but Peterborough have a 30% sell-on fee.
Okay. Yeah.
So, less, Peterborough are so switched on with their, if he goes now, he goes in for excess, what, 20, 30, 40 million quid. That could buy the whole of Peterborough's ground in one sale.
Imagine what you could do with £30 million in society today, but no, let's spend it on fucking footballers. Anyway, let's not go down that line of thinking right now because it will drive me insane, the absurdity of it all. We do need to move on very, very quickly because we're running out of time. I just wanted to pick up one thing from League Two on the weekend, following our win over Sutton elsewhere in the division, something that piqued my interest. Crewe drew 2-2 with Warsaw. Crewe have now come from 2-0 down on three occasions this season to draw 2-2. Which is quite something. Their fourth game, they won 4-2. So they're conceding two goals a game, but they are unbeaten and sitting on 6 points. So I just thought that was an interesting thing to highlight.
Yeah, and also, how long does Mark Hughes keep his job at Bradford?
Not long.
3-0 defeat away to Morecambe, who we all thought were going to be the team down the bottom of the league. I don't know it's early doors yet, but yeah, we all know that, don't we? That the manager merry-go-round kicks in around about September, October. I think he does well to see out August the way he's going.
Yeah, you've just reminded me of something else I hate about football these days is that, the turnover of managers, which has very, very little actual impact on the end of it. Anyway, right, before we preview our game with Forest Green Rovers, a quick go on the Aaron Sasupa match game. You have to fill in the blanks of this sentence, Stu. There are two blanks to fill this week. Okay.
Oh dear.
So, games with Sutton United and Forest Green Rovers. We have a consecutive back-to-back game for Sutton and Forest Green. It's seen us face two of the four teams that, since we returned to the Football League in 2011, have knocked us out of the FA Cup whilst they themselves were non-league teams. The other two teams were blank and blank.
Wow. FA Cup. Since we've come back into.
Yes, it's, so since 2011. So we've been
So
knocked out of the FA Cup four times by non-league teams.
one is Bournemouth.
Well done.
Was going to say Woking, but I don't think Woking was the FA Cup. I think it was a FA
Yeah.
Trophy.
And I also have to point out that whilst Crawley are a non-league team, they knocked us out whilst they were, in fact, in the Football League. Sorry, whilst they're a non-league club in every particular, in every regard.
No, I can't. I remember the Forest Green and I remember the Sun. Nah, my mind's a blank on that one.
Yeah, so you're right. Bournemouth in the third round, 2022, I believe.
Yeah, it's recent.
And then also in 2022, last season, we were knocked out at home by Chesterfield.
Huh. Oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. Chesterfield was one of those, isn't it? You don't. I still class them as a league. I know they're not a league club, but they. Yeah, you
Yeah.
know what I mean.
It's like you think of Chesterfield as a league club and you think of Crawley as a non-league club. Yeah. And you think of Watford as just a bunch of shithouses. Anyway, we are playing Forest Green Rovers with all best will in the world, a club I will always think of as a non-league club as well, with all due respect to Forest Green Rovers fans. I'm not entirely sure what the future holds for Forest Green Rovers because what do they. Yeah, strange. But anyway, last season they got relegated, haven't made it into League One, they got relegated. They finished bottom on just 27 points. Their manager is a man called David Horseman, which I thought was a centre, but I could be, that's mythology for you. Apparently, formerly Southampton B manager. Yes,
Yeah.
Stu and I are looking at each other blankly. Not a clue. Not a clue. But they signed Ryan Innes from Charlton and Matty Taylor from Oxford amongst a big turnover in the summer. Alfie Bendall, of course, he got some game time as a late sub on the weekend as well for them. But they have lost three of their first four games. They played three home games in the league and they've lost all three of them. They won away from home, though. Their sole victory of the season. So they currently sit on 3 points. It's a rubbish game to have because, as much as for me, Chelsea, I mean, I am going to the Chelsea game. I hate Chelsea. Chelsea are a nothing club to me. Not even a proper club, just a joke of a fucking monstrosity of a football club. Anyway, but I realise for a lot of other people, including the players, this is a big thing to go and play at Stamford Bridge on Wednesday. No, I fucking hate Chelsea. I fucking hate them. It's not a big deal going to Stamford Bridge. We're going to Newport the following set, the game after. We're going away to Newport. And as you know, Stu, Newport is the shittest place on in the world, right? It's the most horrible place you can go to. But actually, once you've been to Stamford Bridge, it will suddenly look a million times better. It will look like Rome in comparison. But anyway, but it's a rubbish game. For those players and fans, Chelsea big occasion, what you don't want the game before that is a team that's not going to bring many fans whatsoever. There's no needle in it. It's a bit of a rubbish fixture to have because you've really got to work doubly hard to get yourself up for it.
Yeah, and it's a test for us, isn't it? Because this is, you're right, you're spot on. It's the play, you don't want players not going for tackles, missing the Chelsea game or saying they're injured when they're not, that sort of thing. We've had that before, haven't we? So, yeah, do you know what? This is a real big test of the squad. And I think Johnny Jackson will be looking at as a test of has he got the right characters in? We believe we have. But realistically, we should be going out there and putting Forest Green to the sword. I saw their goals actually against Newport, and wow, the first goal was within kickoff. It's literally a
Yeah.
straight ball over the top. And the second goal is, so we should be able to turn them around. They've got a better team than what you think. And that's Ryan Innes is a decent one, and they got the two Matties. They got the two Matts up front, and they Matty Taylor and Matt Stevens. But it's a team that's just come down, and sometimes you can get caught in that rut, can't you? But yeah, we should be good. We should be beating them. Let's be fair. And keeping our form going. So it's a good test. Do we utilise the squad? Do we? There's some interesting questions, isn't there? So, But yeah,
Do
it's
I'm
after having Wrexham and then Forest Green, it's like the two extremes, isn't it? You know, you got the razzmatazz and the that sort of stuff, and then you got the Forest Green who are going to be trying to find a vegan pie outside somewhere.
Well, vegan sausage rolling Greggs across the road now, isn't there? So
Yes, you have.
should be all right for them. I'm going to go for a disappointing 1-1 draw on Saturday, but I would be delighted to be proved wrong and get us a third consecutive win, which I think last time that happened was in 1974. Chelsea, as you mentioned to me, Stu, Chelsea playing back-to-back games. They host Luton and then us.
Yes.
So it's good to see that some of Stardust is finally making its way to Stamford Bridge. Good luck to them, I say, to play two of the biggest clubs in English football in Luton and Wimbledon. Special times for all the fans of Chelsea who used to support someone else until Roman Abramovich came along. Elsewhere in League Two this weekend, Gillingham versus Colchester has popped out to me on the fixture list, Stu, because it is played 4-1, 4 versus played 3, lost 3, which
Yeah.
has got draw written all over it, hasn't it?
Yeah, do you know what? Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Probably has. Colchester, Gillingham have been very boring. Let's be fair. Four clean sheets, but yeah, no goal here and there. But
James Tilly
yeah,
has scored as many goals as the entire Gillingham squad this season.
isn't that mad? Isn't it? Game that pops out for me is Mansfield Stockport. Stockport
Yeah.
have had a really tough start in terms of the teams they face. You know, lost to Gillingham on the opening day of the season. I think two teams that will look to be up there, won't they? So you got that. And Wrexham going to Barrow. Crikey, one shithole to another. Sorry.
Mansfield and Stockport, of course, I believe, are the last two beaten playoff finalists in this division. But,
Yeah.
God, isn't it? Jesus Christ, it's fucking depressing when you go in. Standout fixtures for us this week are Gillingham, Colchester, Mansfield, Stockport. Jesus. Anyway, let's leave that one there. Let's park that one there. I think I've talked myself into enough trouble for 1 week. I think that's it. I don't think there's anything else to add. Updates from both games will be on Twitter at 9WiresPodcast, of course, and Don's TV returns with all the build up to Forest Green on YouTube and Facebook on the club's official YouTube and Facebook channels from about 2 o'clock on Saturday.
Yes, we've got Alex Bass, who we did an interview with at the training ground this week. And yeah, nice guy. Very quiet, very unassuming. I would just love to see a car share with Bezo and Alex Bass to somewhere like Newport. Because that, oh, crikey. Yeah, they very confident lad, but very unassuming. And goalkeepers are either they're extroverts, aren't they? Or they're just very, very quiet. They're never in between. Yeah,
I'd love to
so.
see a car share with Ray Merry and Ashley Bayes. I think that would be, what a contrast that would be. I tell you what, though, Stu, you mentioned car share there, which got me thinking. My brain immediately leapt to sort of what you see, the whatever the James Corden thing is, the nonsense thing. I never watch it, but you know, whatever, carpool karaoke. Got me thinking about music. The other thing about going to bloody Chelsea, and I know we're running out of time here. If I got to put up with that entertainer bullshit that they do to make themselves think they've got some sort of history and tradition,
You've
like,
really punished us. You've really punished yourself, haven't you, by thinking about a Chelsea game,
it's
by going to
worse.
the Chelsea
It's
game.
worse than Jingo. It's worse than Jingo. Can you imagine I'm actually saying those words?
Yeah, like I say, I'm not going. I've said quite a few people come to you. What, you're not going? It just doesn't interest me going to a I like watching Premier League on football on TV and that, but I just don't want to be around pompous Premier League fans. Don't know. Yeah, it just doesn't interest me. And of course, if we go and win, I won't be there.
Well, we can hope. We can hope. I've never seen us lose at Stamford Bridge, but there's a first time for everything. Anyway, right, Stu, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. That is it for this week. We shall see you next week. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 plus 2 equals 4. And we shall speak to you again some point in the near future.